If you have your Bibles, I invite you to turn to Proverbs chapter 1. I want to read to you a proverb that is a very well-known, important proverb, and I hope will be something that will stick out in your minds as you think about the task of motherhood and fatherhood and just being a good person today. Proverbs 1, verses 8 and 9. Listen, my son, to your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching. They will be a garland to grace your head and a chain to adorn your neck. I can't help but think that Mother's Day is one of the favorite days of Hallmark cards. In fact, I'm sure some of you have been suspicious that maybe Hallmark was the one who was behind the creation of Mother's Day. But I've been told that it was Anna Mae Jarvis who did that 100 years or so ago. But I think Hallmark had a hand in that as well, because there's something about this day that causes all of us to go to the card shops and the florists and to do whatever we can to help our moms know that they're loved. As I thought about the days that the card people and the florists and the jewelers must like, I realize that probably, if you're a jeweler, probably at the top of the list has to be Valentine's Day. I mean, that's the day where you go out and buy the rings and the jewelry and all that kind of stuff. Probably next in line would be something like Christmas. But Mother's Day has to be up there on the jeweler's list as special days. Some of you are familiar with the television ad that I've seen recently of the young family. There's the father and the two daughters and the mom. And the daughters go to their mom and they say, "Mom, we want to give you a special Mother's Day treat. We want to take you to a spa." And the next scene is the mom sitting in a pool, and as they zoom in, you realize this isn't exactly your typical spa. It's in the backyard. They're sitting in an inflatable pool, and there's the two daughters are there, and that's their spa experience. And when it comes to the manicure, the little girls are painting faces on their mother's fingernails. And finally they say, "Mom, we got you a necklace, a diamond necklace." And the mom is already kind of getting used to what to expect in this. And she opens up this box, and sure enough, it's a real diamond necklace. And it takes this subtle shot of the husband looking really satisfied and smug. And it's just a way for the jeweler to say, you know, this is a day for you to spend the bucks to buy something really nice for your wife. Well, today, as we talk about Mother's Day, I don't want to talk about the jewelry we get for mom, but jewelry that moms and dads really can give to their children. Because in this proverb, while it's a proverb that normally is directed at the children, I think we can turn it around and see the value of it as addressed to us as parents and as adults. It says, "Listen to your father's instruction. Do not forsake your mother's teaching. They will be a garland to grace your head, a chain to adorn your neck." It's easy to assume that everything a mom teaches or a dad teaches to their children is going to be something that will adorn them and grace them. But the fact is, what we teach and the influence we have on our children will make a significant difference in their lives. So this morning, I want to give you a really simple message about how you can be an influence on your children, how you as moms can adorn them in a way that will change their lives, and how even we as dads can contribute through our instruction and our influence in a way that will make a difference. And if you're not a mom or a dad this morning, there's something in here for you as well. But to help tell this, I'd like to make the point of the proverb. I'd like to tell you a story. In fact, it's a story about a woman who made a profound difference on a little fifth grade boy. It was a story that took place back in the 1940s. And the reason I know about this little boy and this teacher is because the little boy is my dad. Some of you know that back at Thanksgiving, I started to fulfill a goal that I have, which is to write a book about some of the stories of my dad's life. And this is the second little effort at that. I'm putting them in sermon form, and then hopefully at some point they'll make it into a book. But my dad was 9 or 10 years old when he was in the fifth grade, and he went to school back in Harlem. It was, as some of you know and may remember from back around Thanksgiving when I gave you the first installation of the story, Dad grew up in a section of Harlem called Mousetown, a very dangerous and dirty place. My grandparents, Grandma and Grandpa Robinson, came over from Northern Ireland. They grew up in a little fishing village, outside a little fishing village called Annalong. And Annalong to New York City, I don't know how far that is as a crow flies, but from people living in those two places, they are universes apart. Annalong is a place where the mountains of Mourne roll down to the sea. It's a very pastoral, picturesque, quiet little place. And yet from there, my grandmother and grandfather on my father's side moved to the noise and the dirt and the filth and the crime of Harlem in the 1920s and 1930s. It was an adjustment that I'm sure they took years to make. It was an adjustment that my grandmother, Anne, never fully made. It had to be unsettling to go from the peacefulness of Annalong to the neighborhood in Harlem where they lived. It had to be hard on my grandfather, but it had to be exceptionally hard on my grandmother. I don't think she ever felt safe there a day in her life. And more than that, my grandmother, I am told, was a rather meticulous person. She always wanted everything neat and clean and orderly. And that just didn't happen very well in Harlem. They grew up, my dad grew up in a neighborhood on the west side of Harlem, not too far from the elevated trains on 125th Street. So it was always, there was always noise from the traffic, always noise from the trains. And then the soot and the pollution that were belched out by the factories and by the trains and by the cars just had their way of finding its way into their home. No matter whether the windows were shut and locked, like a black ghost, that grime and filth would just settle on everything. My grandmother would spend hours cleaning up the place, trying to clean off the counters and the floors. And the very next day, she'd wake up and there'd be another layer of grime and soot. It was more than she could take. So when my dad was in fourth grade, something snapped. My dad has never talked much about my grandmother, not said much to me, not said much to my sister, really not told my mom very much. But she had some sort of breakdown when he was in the fourth grade, and she went off to a sanitarium in New York City someplace. She'd never return home. While my dad was in the fourth grade, he adjusted to life alone in an apartment in Harlem. In talking to him about the experience, he said that he'd come home from school. His dad worked for the Railway Express from about 2 o'clock in the afternoon till about 10 o'clock at night. So Dad would come home to an empty apartment, and he said he had two overwhelming feelings when he got home. Loneliness. His mom wasn't there. And fear. It just wasn't a safe place to be. With that as a background, my dad left the fourth grade and entered the fifth grade. And that's when he met Miss O'Brien. Miss O'Brien was my dad's fifth grade teacher. And Miss O'Brien made an impact on my dad's life that affects him to this day. A profound impact. I don't know exactly what it was that caused them to connect. Miss O'Brien wasn't a mother. She wasn't married. Maybe it's because she wasn't married. Maybe it's because she had no children that she took a special interest in this little boy from down the street. Whatever it was, she gave extra attention to this little fifth grader. And this boy who needed so much a mother's attention and a mother's care just ate it up. My dad said that in the fifth grade, that was the first year he ever remembered looking forward to going to school more than looking forward to the weekends. He couldn't wait to be in Miss O'Brien's class. She was one of those teachers who taught everything. You know, it wasn't just English or math. Everything was all taught together. He went to PS Public School 125. I remember when my dad used to tell me about going to PS 125, I thought, growing up in Texas, I thought, why do they name all the schools with numbers? It just, for me, always struck me as indicative of the endless parade of humanity, that there's not a name for these schools, or just a number, so that you're a child in a numberless school. But having said all that and felt that way personally, my dad said that he doesn't recall that his classes were overcrowded. In fact, those were days in which parents and teachers teamed together for a children's education. If a kid got in trouble at school, it was more likely that the parents would support the teacher than undermine what the teacher said about the kids. Different days, but it made a difference in my dad's life. And there in PS 125, my dad met Miss O'Brien. She gave to my dad attention that he desperately needed from a mother figure. She was, whether she meant to be or not, a surrogate mom for him for the fifth grade. And the attention she gave him made all the difference to him. He looked for opportunities to spend time with Miss O'Brien. When school was over, he'd go back and he'd offer to clean her board or to clean the erasers or to help her with some menial task. Anything he could do just to spend time with Miss O'Brien. And she seemed genuinely interested in this young man. My dad recalls that she was the first adult who actually laughed at his jokes. And not just pretend laugh, not one of those polite laughs that adults have with kids, but I mean, she would lay her head back and just laugh, and he knew that she got him. He knew that she cared about him. Well, in the fifth grade, my dad, or maybe shortly before the fifth grade, my dad had had an accident. Or maybe it was an intentional, I don't know what you would call it, but he was on his bike, and one of the members of his gang pushed his bike in front of a car, and my dad got his face all cut up. To this day, if you've paid close attention to my dad, he has a little scar on the left-hand side of his face. And back in the fifth grade, my dad talked out of the side of his mouth. And he was embarrassed by that. In fact, he would cover it up so no one would notice that he talked out of the side of his mouth. As my sister pointed out, there was no neurosurgeon, no plastic surgeon that was going to invest a lot of time and effort in a poor little immigrant boy from Harlem. And so when they sewed him up, they sent him back out and left him with that scar. And he was very self-conscious about it. And so in class, he'd talk about things and put his hand up, and Miss O'Brien most definitely noted. I don't know the timing of it, but somewhere in the fifth grade, Miss O'Brien decided it was time to act. After school one day, when my dad came in to see her, she looked at him and she said, "Haddon, did you have a little stroke or something?" And he didn't even know what a stroke was. She said, "I couldn't help but notice that you talk out of the side of your mouth. And I noticed you kind of put your hand up there like you're embarrassed by that. My dad explained the accident and what had happened. And she said, "I knew it. I knew it. Before this, I just suspected it, but now I know it." That is your mark of greatness. And he looked at her with this bewildered look. And she said, "No, every great individual, every great man has the mark of greatness. And that's your mark." She said, "Think about it. Napoleon Bonaparte, the great French leader and political person who made a difference in French history. He was just a runt, just a little guy. That was his mark. He had to live with that. But in living with it, it made a difference in his life." She said, "Think about Jimmy Durante, who at the time, those of you who are younger than I am may not have any idea who he was, but he was a comedian and an actor and a singer, and had a nose that you couldn't miss because it came in the room a few minutes before he did. As he called it, it was his schnozola." And she said, "That's Jimmy's mark of greatness." And she said, "Think about our president, who at that time was Franklin Roosevelt. I think he was starting his third term as president." She said, "He has taken us out of the Depression, and he has helped us through difficult times, and he's now in his unprecedented third term." And you may not know this, Haddon, but the pictures don't show it very well, but he has polio. You never see him standing because he is always in his wheelchair. She said, "That's his mark of greatness." And she said, "I think this is your mark of greatness. And that you are destined for great things." Now, whether you think that's a bunch of words or not, they were words that made a lasting difference in my dad's life. He quit talking with his hand in front of his mouth. He went through elementary school and junior high and graduated 2 years early from high school, somewhere at the top of his class. When he went to college, he again graduated at or near the top of his class, and he went to a Christian school. And this young man with paralysis on part of his face was voted the most outstanding preacher in his college. And he went on to seminary and he began to teach preaching and got a master's degree and a doctor's degree in communications. And this weakness was something that, because of Miss O'Brien, had been converted into a mark of greatness in his life. And if you know my dad, as many of you do today, you know he's an outstanding preacher. He, in fact, is known as one of the great teachers of preaching today. And I think it largely goes back to the influence of Miss O'Brien. Her conversation with him, out of sincere love and concern for a young man who was in her class, changed his whole outlook, his whole perspective. And what she did as a teacher is exactly what we as parents are called to do, what you as moms are called to do. Your instruction, your input in your children's lives either blesses them or blasts them with a perspective on how they view themselves and how they view life. So one of the greatest things that Miss O'Brien did, whatever she taught my dad about all the reading and writing and arithmetic skills, more than anything else, she gave him a self-image that changed the way he looked at himself. And as parents, we have the opportunity to build into our children a positive outlook. And that's not all that hard when we think about the things that they do well. We think of their skills and their gifts and their abilities. Those are great opportunities when you see your children exercising those skills to praise them and to tell them how gifted and talented and capable they are. I think some of us as parents almost are afraid to do that with our children, but they desperately need it. But even more than that, our children need to know that even their areas of weaknesses can be areas that can be sources of greatness. I don't know that Miss O'Brien was a Christian. I don't know what informed her thinking. But I thought of another passage of Scripture that says much the same thing. It's over in 2 Corinthians chapter 4. And it reads this way. Paul writes to the Corinthians in 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 7. But we have this treasure in jars of clay to show that this all-surpassing power is from God and not from us. I've seen over the years how my dad has been a spokesman for the grace of God, how he recognizes that whatever gifts and skills he has are there from God, and even his weaknesses are there with God's understanding and God's purposes. And one of the great things that moms and dads, and you know what? You don't have to be a mom or a dad to do this. A teacher, a Sunday school teacher, a neighbor, an aunt, an uncle can have the same sort of impact on a child, helping them to realize that their strengths and even their weaknesses are somehow filtered through the hand of God for good in their lives. Somehow that made an impact on my dad. And I hope today, as you celebrate Mother's Day, that you spend some time praising your moms and telling them how special they are and letting them know that you're thankful for all the sacrifices and all the wonderful things that they've done for you. That's something that we need to do for our moms. And moms, I hope that you have a great day with your children letting you know how special and loved you are. But I also hope that this will be a day in which you think about that necklace that you can put around your children, that way you can adorn them that will make a difference, a profound difference for all of their lives. Because for mothers and for others, the most profound impact we can have, or one of the most profound impacts we can have, is by giving them a godly self-image that will shape them for good and for God in their lives. That is an instruction. That is an impact. That is a contribution that moms and dads and aunts and uncles and teachers can make in the lives of children. I don't know that that Miss O'Brien ever knew the difference that she made in my father's life. I ask him, he assumes that since he's 77 years old that she has been gone for a while, but he wishes he could tell her. But one thing I can tell you is whether she ever knows it or not, whether you ever know it or not, if you and I set out to be people who make a difference in the lives of a young son, daughter, child, we can make a difference that just might make a difference for eternity. Would you bow with me as we pray?